I'll just potpourri of some of the things that that I see in individuals. Well, to-do list. We all have them, right? To-do list. They're both great and also a bane of our existence. Why do we like it? We like it because it gives us a plan, that's for sure. It gets things out of our head. I'm going to talk about this later on, the importance of getting things out of working memory. It's so important. Don't try to keep things in working memory. Our capacity is 7 chunks. You have 8 and you're in trouble, you're stressed, write it down, put it on your smartphone or whatever. So a list does that. It gives us a sense of control, a sense of order. But what else does it do? I'm convinced that we love the scratch, don't we? Can you just feel it now? Can you imagine just going through that? Isn't that a nice feeling? It's one of accomplishment, eh? But I warn you, it is both good and it is bad. Because some people get hooked on it, the sense of accomplishment. And I'll give you some examples of a man urinating and looking at his BlackBerry at the same time. It comes from this because you buy a philosophy of always achieving and you're never off. You're never off. And that philosophy seeps into your life. So that's a huge cause of stress. We have to realize that we'll never complete it, right? We always start, and why never don't we learn this? Because we always start off, say, oh, gee, this is a list, but maybe it's too much. Then we realize we didn't complete it. So I'll do fewer items the next day. No, I'll do even more on my to-do list. We never learn, right? But in the back of your mind, remember this talk, remember my voice, and say, you will not complete this. Don't expect it. Don't stay at work till 8 o'clock thinking that you're going to do it. Because if you do it, there are going to be new ones tomorrow anyhow. So don't get caught up in this. And then I have people that have a full day in terms of accomplishment. But the problem is that they were accomplished things that weren't on their to-do list. So the managers that went out, left their office, and were grabbed, buttonholed by somebody, and they ended up doing something on the other person's to-do list, and they did all day like that. They were extremely productive, but at the end of the day, they said, I didn't do anything. And what do they mean? They didn't do anything on their own to-do list, right? So be careful of that kind of delusion. You're working. It still counts. Just because it wasn't on your to-do list, it still counts. And accept the idea that you're not going to accomplish everything. So that's one point, to-do list. Another thing that I see in my practice is this dialectic between cooperation and competition. And it was mentioned that I work for the Expos, and this player will be unnamed, but I thought this is a great quote. You want to be the best, but you can't show it too much or you'll be an asshole. I thought, yeah, that's it. That's true with all of us. Psychologists, there's a subtle competition. When I was running rounds, as who was the most insightful? Yeah, we've all got PhDs, but who's more empathetic and deep, right? It wasn't spoken, but it was palatable in terms of competition. So we all want to be number one, right? And it happens with individuals, but it also happens in another book that I'd like to direct your attention to. It's called The Evolutionary Theory of Economic Change. And these economists argue it also happens among organizational units. So it happens among individuals and units working, obviously, for the same company. So companies are comprised of fiefdoms where executives compete for power and control. Divisions compete for resources and sabotage each other for glory. You don't think it's true? It is. It is all the time. And they might be working the same for IBM, but the big mainframe guys are against the software guys, against the business consultant guys, and whatever. It happens all the time, as I was fighting psychiatry for 25 years as chief psychologist. So how you balance this and how you advance your career, because if you try to advance your career by being number one, it's not going to work. So I often consult with people who are stuck in their career, and I talk about career advancement by helping others, by being an aid to other people. And that's the way. It's not by self-aggrandizement. It's not by self-promotion. It's by helping others. We talk about strategy. Who do you want to impress? So we talk about strategic thinking. Who do you want to impress? How do you want to impress? These things I never discussed in business school, but extremely important in career development. And that's one of the rules that I... Interpersonal, I love this quote by Kadwa. People get hired for their skills and fired for their personality. Isn't that true? When we assess people, we always look at their skills and then it's their personality that does them in. So the number of people that I see that suffer from critical bosses or people with bad temperaments. And here's another book. They don't teach corporate in college. And I'm just surprised because I go into businesses, especially small businesses, and they don't do this. And it just strikes me as maybe because I've worked in a university environment or a hospital that we just don't talk about religion, politics, and sex. But I've been in some companies where I think everybody's reading 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, that all the time. That's they talk about on Monday. Who'd you sleep with? I mean, it sounds silly, but that's what happens. This is not going to work. How many more minutes I have? Two more minutes? This is an obligatory slide, right? I'm a psychologist. I have to show you a rat. You can't see it, but this rat is pressing a lever, and you know the old thing, and this lever is connected by a relay to food so that you do something, you get a reward. Versus this little guy who's running away from something. So that there's a buzzer that comes on, and 3 seconds later a shock comes on, and to avoid the shock, he has to jump over in the side. Both are equally good ways of teaching people and animals new behavior. Both are equally great. But if you do the second one, and if your life is dominated by the second one, you're going to have a lot of stress. And recently I met a young woman who was burned. She was hired in her job, and they said that we wanted a creative person in this job. She was creative and coming up with, she had a planned meetings. She did. She invited people that she thought were relevant, and her boss dumped on her. And what did she learn? To check everything out. And to check everything, going to run it by. And it was like she was buying an insurance policy against criticism. But the problem is that the premium was paid each and every day. It wasn't as if, like, we have household insurance, and I think of a fire maybe when I'm writing the check once a year. But she was paying this premium every day. So every time she had an idea, she would go and check it by. So she was living to avoid censure and working to avoid censure. She is successful, but stressed. What else do I want to talk about? Last one, and I'll end here. Don't have to go to Harvard to get an executive MBA. If you're a manager, do these 4 points. They were never done when I was working. No boss that I've ever worked for did these things for me. Tell the people what they're supposed to do. Have very specific goals, well-defined. Train your people to make sure that they can achieve them and give them the tools. Number of people that are just running on bad software or antiquated equipment have very good goals, but their equipment doesn't allow them to achieve it. Measure their performance periodically. Measure how they're achieving those goals. And the last one is most important, reward and recognize. I spend so much time with executives talking to them, why don't you compliment? The answers are incredible. Well, if I compliment, they'll stop. If I tell somebody it's a good job, that's going to be the end. They're going to reach there. Just the opposite. It's oil that makes it work better. It unleashes what's called discretionary effort. It gets people to work even harder. I don't know how to commit. They're so scared. If I say good job, they're going to quit. No, just the opposite. They'll work harder. Right? Do those 4 things. Be a great manager. We'll have less people on disability, and we'll understand work and stress better. Great talking to you. That's it.
Thank you very much, Ian, for the very enjoyable talk, and I think you focused on many issues that we all face. When I get back to the office, I'm going to take my pen and...
but not too much.
Not too much. And then we'll take a deep breath. We don't have that much time right now, but we do still have a couple of moments for questions. So if there are any questions from the audience, I'll be more than happy to entertain. If you have a question, please just press your microphone so the light will come on and we'll know where you are. Questions?
One. Give me one.
Dora?
Oh,
When I, just your last slide there, talking about giving people the tools, what about creating tool makers, not tool takers? In other words, giving them the ability to make their own tools.
Sure. Oh, great idea. Because then the last slide that I wanted to talk about was the importance of autonomy as a modulator of stress, and the idea that if people can create and decide upon their own way of achieving the goal, then that increases motivation 100 points and 100-fold and decreases stress. So sure, I like that very much. Yeah, great idea.
Yes, just press the button, please.
Hi, thanks for the talk.
Sure.
In psychology textbooks, when they talk about stress at work, very frequently they say that the research says that work that is stressful is workful, that is work that is repetitive, in which people have no choice, and so on. I've got all kinds of choice, and it's not repetitive. How come I feel stressed?
We'll talk. Come in. No, I agree. I think that was true a long time ago when we were talking about manufacturing jobs. Sure. That you talked about somebody that was doing the same thing, and what was really important is job enrichment. So getting people to have a variety of tasks. But the world of work has changed. We're no longer in that mass production, long-run production manufacturing world, so I think those things are wrong. I think control is very important. The second aspect, you said redundancy and control. I think control is important, that you have a sense of how you're doing it. It's related to the first question, that you contribute to the way something could be done. If you can't select the goals, then at least you have a choice in an autonomy and how they should be achieved. So I think that's important. And there's strong research that control is a modulator, at least for coronary heart disease, in terms of modulating work stress. Yeah?
No, you've got to press it so
they... Okay, like that?
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering, from your point of view, from the employee side,
yes,
what is the best way to approach the employer to discuss any of these
points
at work?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, there's so many different answers, and depending on the circumstances, maybe having somebody from outside to modulate the discussion. Ideally, this is human resources. But the problem with human resources departments is they're so preoccupied with payroll and labor negotiations that they don't have the interest or the expertise in this. So having a third person, I think, is good. Having a retreat or staff training that looks upon this and then follows it up, I think, is extremely important. I think it's very useless to go away for a half a day or 3 hours and just end there. But to go away and broach some of these topics and say, we're going to have this as a continuing follow-up and we'll meet next year to see the results, I think that could help too. So maybe those things. Yeah, great question.
And now I think people are stressed out looking at the...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, great.
So,
okay.
Thank you very
much.
Good. On behalf of the campus,
thank you.
And,
thank you. Thank you very much.